Hello, everyone, and welcome to Heavy Potter's Heavy Cast, episode 181. And as you can hear from the energy in my voice, we're having a great time.
Yay, everything is fine. My amplifier did not die last night in a lightning storm.
Amplifier? For what?
I have, like, speakers.
Oh, I see. Yeah, okay.
Like, monitors.
Yeah. Also, your display.
Sorry?
Your display. Monitor.
My display? Right? Oh, no, like studio. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. Also, I'm learning Svelte. Have you heard of Svelte? It's like this hot new framework.
No.
It's supposed to be like React, but better.
I mean, God. I mean, yeah, sure, okay.
Anyway, I'm learning it just because I want to learn like a new thing, and I'm so clearly out of my depth. I'm trying to build like a music app, actually. Did I talk to you about this? The flowchart thing?
No, I heard you post about it on Facebook, but we haven't talked about it.
So there's no news. We can talk about whatever. There's like very few items that we want to cover. So there's this like type of flowcharts that people create in like Paint or Photoshop or whatever, where they give you like the first album of a band. Like, for example, doesn't have to be chronologically, but like the accepted album is like the best. For example, like Gojira's Way of All Flesh.
Magma.
Magma. Like a Metallica Master of Puppets, right?
Yeah.
And then it says, okay, do you want what you heard, but you want more progressive elements? Then go listen to Injustice for All.
I get it.
Right? Thing is, it's always so shoddy because people have to make it manually. So I thought, hey, I want to learn like a new web development framework. Why don't I use this as a project to build like a nice interface where you can go to, I'll use like the Last.fm APIs. You search for a band, gives you all the album covers, and then you have like a cool drag and drop UI. And it has like boxes ready made and arrows and like Ronnie suggested like suggested adjectives, you know, like a list of like adjectives you can use to describe like the progressions and stuff like that. So I'm working on that.
Nice.
And yeah, Svelte is a good choice. Like I could,
Music elitism flowcharts as a service.
Exactly. As a service. Yeah, exactly. I'll make the big bucks that way. Svelte or like anything reactive is a good choice, right? Because you want the flowchart to always update and have like the current image and stuff like that. And the search has to be very responsive. So it's been on my list to like learn something reactive. So I'm trying to do that and I'm having a terrible time. But you know, that's how it always is in the beginning. So I hope that as I go along, I figure it out.
Yeah, like I'm not primarily a web developer, but I have dabbled in web development as part of things that I've done. And like all these like fucking web frameworks that come and go. It's like it was jQuery, then Angular, then React. And they're all just like miserable and unique ways. And
yeah,
they get better over time.
The problem now is like because it's such a mess, right? And there's so many like competing philosophies and organizations in this field that even just installing one of these things is a nightmare. It's like, oh, you can use Rollup. It's this very easy installer, and then you go to install Rollup.
Yeah, yeah.
But Rollup requires
Yarn and then NPM. And all,
fuck you in the face, JavaScript framework. And then that requires, it's
the problem with that type of framework is what usually happens is that like any framework gets you like at most like 90% of the way there. For the last 10%, you need to use like a different framework, but they're like completely incompatible with each other and like how they kind of represent states and all that stuff.
I fucking hate the tone of, you know, you finish the tutorial and then they're like, and of course you can easily extend this framework via APIs. I'm like, fuck you. Don't lie to me. It's not easy to extend frameworks, you bunch of assholes. Like it's such a condescending approach. I feel like all these documents have. The cool thing about Svelte and the reason that I wanted to check it out is that it actually compiles everything you write back to vanilla JavaScript. So you can always just say fuck it and work with like the bare roots of it, and that also makes sure that like in 4 years when it goes out of fashion, at least it's not completely incomprehensible because it relies on like very basic vanilla JavaScript. Welcome to this programming podcast. We are pivoting.
Yep.
Isn't that what they do now in Silicon Valley? They pivot.
Pivot like
pivot into
divot.
Like weapons.
No comment.
Actually, I'll make the comment for you. Like, Apple is actually pretty good on that front. Like, the one of the major big tech companies that aren't dabbling in, like, killing people. Yeah. Okay. Speaking of, I don't know where this is going.
Speaking of killing people, the song, the Oxford Handbook on genocidal warfare on the new Nile album is amazing.
The entire fucking album is just...
It's so good.
I feel like it's like the promise of death metal condensed. Like, it's like, this is why you listen to death metal. Listen to this album. It's so aggressive and high energy. Even like the cheesy ass Nile samples work really well on this album. It's a comeback album almost, right?
Yeah. I mean, they lost the key member. And in my opinion, like the previous album was pretty meh. And the one before that wasn't very well received, even though I like it. So like ever since 2009, Those Whom the Gods Detest, they haven't been like, you know, firing on all cylinders.
Yeah.
And even that album was kind of the one before that, Ithyphallic, and before that, Annihilation of the Wicked. Like, those albums were kind of a different direction for Nile, in kind of a more polished, almost, way that some Nile fans were not happy with. I think this kind of brings it all together. It's, like, it sounds polished, like, it's the best they've ever sounded, but also it has a lot of the, like, weirder stuff that they've had going on for many albums now. Sorry, yeah, they've lost for many albums now in their earlier albums.
Yeah, the production on this album is fucking insane. And I
this
think
is the first Nile album in which I can hear the bass.
Right, you can hear the bass. And also, I think they've done an incredible job on the drum sounds. I think right now my favorite track is Seven Horns of War.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Just because of the insane fucking blast beats that Kolias does on it. It's just like mind-blowing. And because of the production, you can actually hear every hit, even though he's playing so fast. Mm-hmm. It just, there's nothing quite like well-executed death metal passages of this sort. It's like so powerful and so invigorating. It's just a great album. And also, like, they've been around for so long. The fact that you can, like, dig five albums back into the discography and talk about, like, the different, like, segments and history and styles that they had. And for them to make, like, such a powerful album this late into the career is, like, really fucking impressive. Especially, as you said, when they lost, like, a key member.
Yep. And, like, I don't know if it's, like, the new guy invigorated the band or, you know, they just took some time off and came back. Because, like, they took 4 years between the previous one and this one. Whereas, you know, they've been doing, like, a pretty regular 3-year cycle before that.
I also feel like this album, like, it sounds like they've listened to a lot of death metal being released around them. Mm-hmm. I can't know for sure, right? But it sounds like a natural, not answer, but like progression when you listen to like Arcspire's latest. A lot of the production really reminds me of Arcspire's approach to production and other bands in that like sphere. So it sounds like they're a veteran band, and in the time off, they were like, okay, what's the genre doing today, right? Like, how does this stuff sound today? And what can we take from this that not too much that we're not Nile anymore, but just enough so that we sound like more refreshed and invigorated? So maybe that played a part.
Yeah, like they've kind of also feels like they've listened to the criticism. In
yeah,
a sense.
For sure.
And so the interesting thing is, for the longest time, since like trying to go back to the discography, I think, yeah, so ever since Annihilation of the Wicked, that whole polished sound business, they've been working with this producer named Neil Kernan.
Mm-hmm.
And this time they worked with a different producer. I forget the name. Anthony mentioned it to me. Let me just look it up real quick. Mark Lewis. And this Mark Lewis guy is has a different, like, so he's more of a, look, let me just tell you the things he's done, right? He's done Neoblivisceris' Urn. He's done Fallujah's Dreamless.
I was going to say Fallujah, by the way, for the drum sound.
Yeah. Conquering Dystopia, Whitechapel's Endless War. Like, he's more of a kind of modern death metal producer.
Yep.
So I feel like working with, hey, go read our article, The Lost Art of Production by Tom.
Yeah, Patton. Totally. Yeah.
Like, definitely feels like a different producer has brought them like a different life while still being faithful to their sound, right? Like they're not changed so much that they're unrecognizable. They're still and very Nile.
Yeah, and that kind of fits in with what you said about a new member. Maybe what they needed is like someone to bring them back to a unit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that a producer can do. Read that Tom's article. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's what happened here. Like they needed someone to maybe explain to them from like an outside perspective how they can integrate their new sound and their new member. And the result is like something much more dynamic and organic, right? And it flows much better.
Yep. So great. I mean, it always felt like kind of Carl Sanders is this like singular guy who just kind of does his thing and doesn't care what anybody else thinks. And to some extent, that's great, right? Because, you know, he has a thing, he does it, and he's good at it. But like also a little bit of kind of opening it up and bringing in other people also definitely works out. And this album is great. Like, I think it's their best since at least Those Are the Gods That Test. And I think it's most similar to Ithyphallic, which is like the kind of cult classic album of theirs. And it's probably my second favorite I don't know. It goes back and forth. The thing is, like, I always go back and forth between Those Whom the Gods Detest for kind of the modern sound and Ithyphallic for the weird stuff. And this balances them both, so it's really good.
Yeah, totally. Yep.
I keep saying Ithyphallic. I meant In Their Darkened Shrines. That's the classic, cult classic, weird album. I don't know why I keep saying Ithyphallic.
Luckily, I'm no Nile expert, so I can't really nitpick your...
In Their Darkened Shrine is, like, the first album that Dallas joined, ironically. The guy who left. And that album, they have like a 18-minute track that is like four parts. You know, so it's you know, they did all that weird stuff, and so this is kind of more like that. Great. Speaking of like great death metal and magma, the new Fit for an Autopsy album is fucking incredible.
Yeah, best Gojira album in a decade. Yeah, basically.
I mean, it's very Gojira. Like their previous album was, but I feel like this one is even more like kind of accepting that. And it's great. Like, this is the direction I feel I would prefer that Gojira went after The Way of All Flesh.
Yeah. And like, this is not a band that is characteristic for me to like.
Mm-hmm.
And I've like glossed over them in the past, but the previous release was really solid. And I feel like this one is even better. I like how compact it is. It is a bit shorter, I think, but also not just in runtime, the way like everything flows together, it's nonstop. There's no breaks. There's no like low energy moments. Everything just keeps hitting you. And especially I want to call out the vocals, which I feel like, you know, it's kind of funny or not common to hear vocals being called out in deathcore, right? That's like one of the most straightforward instruments I feel like in the genre. But here, they really prove that there's a way to do that kind of like throaty, high energy scream, kind of like Joe Duplantier, right?
Mm-hmm.
In Better Days. Those like deep, deep seated screams, and they're so fucking good on this album, and they really get you pumped. And I also like, for lack of a better word, the aesthetic. And by that, I mean like how the album cover plus the themes and even the lyrics, you know, which again is not something you're used to like calling out in a deathcore group. They do a really good job of like painting the scene for the album.
Yep.
And this is another like Gojira tie-in because they have a lot of themes about like animals and like nature unleashed and stuff like that. And I feel like it's going back to the days where Gojira actually bothered to write those lyrics. Instead of just stringing some sentences together, like, you are the beast, you become yourself when you heal your inside. That's like modern Gojira. Whereas with Fit for an Autopsy, they do much more interesting things with the themes and the direction of the album and everything.
Yep.
So yeah, super solid release.
It's like where deathcore should be. Like,
yeah.
I feel like, you know, I've talked about this before, but like the OG era of deathcore had like so much promise, and then it went like the laziest direction possible, the genre like as a whole. And I think this is kind of a good evolution of the kind of creativity and energy of the original deathcore scene.
And I had no idea, by the way, that Will Putney is in the band.
Is he? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he does guitars ever since 2008.
Well, that makes sense, right?
Yeah, that makes total sense. I just had no idea.
Yeah, I didn't know he was like a musician as well.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, yeah, this album's fucking amazing.
I made loose. I made loose. Knocked Loose is the first artist. I made sure that it's actually him. By the way, just going over his production list is just like,
oh yeah,
what the fuck?
It's crazy. To be fair, insane. Like, I'm not like a huge fan of his sound as a whole.
Yeah.
But like, when it works, it works. Like, I don't think because I feel like he has a similar sound for everything. Mm-hmm. But like, it, for example, on stuff like Molotov Solution, it was great. Here, it's great. And Human Abstract, I don't think it worked particularly well. Mm-hmm. On After the Burials in Dreams, I don't think it worked particularly well.
Right.
Yeah. So, but yeah, good producer.
For sure. Yeah, and I feel like, you know, this band like takes that sound to the max and does really interesting things with it. Mm-hmm. And now we also know that they kick ass live, right?
Yep.
Because Kerrang,
yeah, Kerrang's YouTube channel, they post these like amazing, well-produced live shows from their own venue, and they did one with Fit for an Autopsy, and like it's, man.
Yeah,
Will produced the live version of this as well, by the way. Apparently it sounds like almost identical to the album.
Yeah,
it's super good, and like the cleans are nailed, the energy is great, like it sounds so good, looks so fun.
Yeah, it looks really fun. It's like this tiny venue in Brooklyn, and the energy is really cool. There's some cool shirts in the crowd. There's a guy with a Fuming Mouth shirt. We spoke about Lewandowski, so that's one of the covers that he did this year. And there's a guy in the front with a with a Gojira shirt, which is kind
of
like,
you're not supposed to wear the shirt of the band you're seeing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
By the way, that is bullshit. That's stupid. I hate that.
Super bullshit. Yeah. It's like something you'd say when you're in high school. Who the fuck cares what you're wearing? But it's like, we know you like Gojira. You're at the Fit for an Autopsy shows. It's like, but they have a really cool energy, and they do a really good job. You know, it's not like, it's not the same kind of impressiveness that it's like seeing Arcspire play live and holy shit, they can pull it off. But just seeing that it's not just them like hitting notes. They actually like, they mean it, and the same punch that's on the album is maintained in a live setting. It's a super cool video. And I think it's a video I would show people who ask me why I like to go and see metal live.
Mm.
Like, I think it gets that energy across.
Yep. I just added this to the agenda, so I don't know if you had a chance to check it out.
Mm-hmm. This Nevermore thing.
Yeah, this just dropped. So Tom Fountainhead, we just talked about him.
Yeah.
He recently got a new fretless custom guitar from Aristides, or however you pronounce that thing.
Yeah.
And like people have been clamoring for him to like post something with it. So he did.
I swear to God, I was gonna say it was them. Their shape, love it or hate it, is just so signature.
Yep.
They look like cars almost.
Yeah, like a futuristic sports car. Cars.
Yeah, like a sports car.
But like a kind of retro sports.
Yeah.
So this has been an idea that Tom's been floating around for a while, of like him doing covers of stuff with a fretless guitar, but he covers the vocals. So he covers Nevermore's Narcosynthesis.
Such a good track.
Yep. And he plays the guitars, but also he does the vocals. And like, weirdly, Worrell's like very weird singing style works really well with the fretless. Like he has this wailing sound that he just like goes up and down, and like the fretless is just like perfect for it. It's really cool. It's a really cool cover.
Yeah, I'm listening to it as we speak, and it's really, really interesting to see the fretless used in this way. And it kind of adds like a whole, it makes it even weirder in ways.
Yep.
It adds this undertone to the vocals, which is really interesting. Super cool.
Yep. So check it out. It's cool stuff. And like, Tom is an incredible player.
Yeah. Yeah. It's ridiculous how talented he is.
All right. So speaking of other like interesting musical gimmicks, I haven't like fully watched this thing, but Rob Scallon, we talk about him from time to time, YouTuber.
Yeah.
He does like cool guitar stuff. And there's another musician YouTuber, Andrew Huang. He does more kind of electronic music related stuff, but they kind of occupy similar circles. They collaborate a lot. Last year, they did an album in a day thing where they sat down, like they got together and wrote, recorded, produced an album in a day. Like no yeah. prior work, right? They had That's to insane. Basically, and it's like, it was terrible. which, you know, well, that's what you would expect. There's some cool stuff in it, but overall it's pretty bad. But then, you know, it's an interesting experiment. Like I think the process is good. I think what they did was good. Musically, it wasn't the best, right? But like, yeah. that's fine. It's more about the experiment and how you can force yourself to be creative and like how you, like it's really interesting. So go watch their first video first. But then they did it again this year. And so I haven't listened to the whole thing yet, but it sounds like it was much better this year because, like, of course, like you learn, right?
Yeah, and they already have a dynamic with each other, right?
Yeah. And also, like, they get to, like, they figured, like, certain things they did the first time around, they figured out that, it, you know, what works, what doesn't work. They had to crunch for time in some aspects. So now they can kind of account for that better, plan better. And as a result, like, I think it was much better this time around. So yeah, go check that out. Album in a Day.
So I also added something to the list, and it's a YouTube thing. So I'm okay. gonna segue to this.
Oh, Tentacool. Yeah. This one.
So you changed my life when you introduced me to Tentacool Sibelius video. I watch it like every 6 months. It's just incredible. If you haven't seen it, it's like the best video made about the intersection between product development and design and music.
Yep.
It's hilarious. I send it to everybody. I send it to all the product managers in like the company I work for. Like, don't do this. Just go watch this. And he released.
By the way, Tentacruel also hangs in the same crowds as these guys.
Yeah, and also Adam Neely and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, it's and
like
David Bruce.
Yeah, David Bruce, exactly. Yeah. So last week, or it was 2 weeks ago already, on October 18th, he released a video called Corporate Music, How to Compose with No Soul. Well, he kind of goes
and
over.
The thumbnail is Synergize Me Some Tunes.
Yeah. So this also hits close to home because I'm on a marketing team. So we have a video guy and he makes videos and he needs music. And it's always this like corporate soulless bullshit. At least he knows, right? He's not pretending it's like good music. And he's always playing it in loops on his speakers and I want to fucking die. so this really hits home. And the second thing is, you know, a lot of people like to say, yeah, man, Muzak, like record companies are killing music and corporations and blah, blah, blah. But they don't actually understand what that means. I agree with them that happens, but not in the way that they think it happens. They think it's like Miley Cyrus or Billie Eilish that do that, whereas that has nothing to do with it. There's like a whole class of music that is so much worse than even the most vapid, empty pop you could find. Oh, yeah. It's so much worse, and that's actual corporate music. So Tentacool, with his usual touch, does a really good job of explaining both musically, like why the music is so soulless,
mm-hmm.
but also like the ethical perspective on it, like how oil companies use that kind of music to convince people that they're actually activists. And obviously he always draws on like musical theory, and he doesn't take it too seriously. Like sometimes he says, oh, this is just bad, right? It's just incompetence. There's no like grander scheme of evilness to it. But then sometimes he shows how it really is just blatantly evil. It's a really, really good video. And it's funny because all this stuff is funny.
Yep.
Go watch it. It's super interesting. If you want to actually look at music that's like destroyed by capitalism, this is a very, very good example of it.
Yep. Yeah, Tentacool. Good channel.
Yeah, sure.
He also had a video about like Shostakovich. Have you seen
yeah.
that one?
Yeah, I like Shostakovich, so it was also a good one for me.
Yep. I still want him to do a video on Guitar Pro 7, 6, 7. He would rip it to shreds, dude. Like, so minor rant. Like,
yeah,
Guitar Pro. 3, 4, 5 were like a pretty similar interface that kind of got added to over time. With 6, let me step back. Guitar Pro is like a, you know, composition software, basically, mm-hmm. like yep. lets you write music. You can write tabs in for all kinds of instruments.
Or if you're like Rings of Saturn, you can write your whole album in it also. producer.
Yes. Anyway, I do like that they owned that joke by like actually putting Guitar Pro sounds in one of the intros of one of their songs.
I love in general like how Rings of Saturn have handled their like legacy, yeah. But they're just the easiest band to go to when making this joke. So
So what was I saying? Right. So the thing is, it was originally for like composition, right, and mm-hmm. for practice and learning. And you use basically like MIDI sounds, which is like, you know, basic bleep bloop computer sounds. On 5.
Proof of concepts.
Yeah. On 5, for some reason, they added this realistic sound engine, which was nowhere near realistic. It sounded horrible. And it also was like extremely taxing on your computer. And then on 6, they revamped the UI to become like a pseudo Sibelius.
Oh, God.
But like worse in every way, like it was so bad, so unresponsive, and like they keep forcing you to use like the realistic sound engine, and like keep basically they keep forcing you to use the program in a particular way, whereas like there was no forcing on Guitar Pro 5, like you could just do whatever you want, and like it's so laggy because it feels like it's just like this, like they, I don't know what UI framework they're using, but it feels like a like Windows 95 program
that's
just like forced to be modernized. And it's just like there's way too many buttons on screen at any given time, which most of them you're not going to be using. So like, why is it occupying screen space? And it's just so uncomfortable to use. And they've basically on 6, they like took away a lot of the functionality that they had in 5. People got really upset. They brought it back a lot of it in 7, but like begrudgingly, right? So it's like
They threw it in like one menu at a corner of the app.
Yeah, it's not well integrated, and like it kind of clashes with the rest of the design. It's just like it's just a nightmare, and like it's so laggy. I have a sample up on my SoundCloud where I play the same tab for my album on 5 and on 7 side by side, and like. It lags. Like, it sounds different. God. Like, the notes are off. Even when that's using terrible. MIDI. How do they make MIDI slow? What the fuck is wrong with this?
Yeah, MIDI's been around for, like, what, 20 years now?
Longer. Like, MIDI longer, is... Like, MIDI has been, like, before the NES. Like, MIDI is... Yeah. It's, like, 30 plus... 40 years, maybe. how do you make it slow? And then, like, the realistic sound engine, they keep making it better, but, like, it's... So... I don't understand if they're trying to like make it so good that like you use it like you just use Guitar Pro to make music and like you know that's the final music, but it's not going to be as good. It sounds really bad and has like a really trademark sound, and you have to like mess with it so much to get it to sound like reasonable, but it only works with like certain genres, right? It kind of works with like rock and maybe a little bit like indie, but for metal it just completely does not work. It's extremely laggy when you're doing fast stuff and like all over the place. And
oh my God.
Like the thing is, they're trying to be like a DAW, a digital audio workstation, you know, production program.
Yeah.
Like they added functionality like so you can plug your guitar in and play and record. Like why? Like this, it's fine for you to be just like a composition software. Why are you trying to be like a recording software now and like doing a really shitty job at it while also be like making
it's a classic case of like doing too many things and then sucking at all of them.
Yeah, like they've compromised on their core functionality and like while making a shitty attempt at making something that's like not in their wheelhouse. There's dedicated companies out there making like realistic virtual instruments and they sound pretty good, but like you're not gonna get there yourself. And the thing is, like, they don't support like plugins, for example. Like, so you have to go
fuck you.
Yeah, so like you have to do everything in Guitar Pro Land, and like the file format they have for saving is like still tabs. God. Like, it's just like
the thing that's depressing is like I can imagine all the meetings in the company, like just talking about propriety and funnels and how they make money off of all this bullshit instead of fixing the actual problems. It's just so fucking depressing.
They're French, by the way.
Oh, whatever. That's even worse somehow.
No. Like they're not like you know,
Silicon Valley.
Yeah, exactly.
Who knows?
Like, so I don't know what they're trying to achieve. Like, And no, so most of the musicians I know either use like five and they've stuck with it. And the, even though it like doesn't work well in modern operating systems, it crashes constantly. It's like, let me tell you this, right? Like I use five, Tom uses five, a bunch of people I know use five, despite it constantly crashing on modern operating system.
When it works, it actually does what you want.
Yeah, like,
yeah.
That says something about how much worse the 7 experience is that you're using something that constantly crashes.
Yeah.
Like, it's miserable. And like, the only people who use 7 that I know of are people who are, it's because it's the only version that they can obtain now. Like, I have a legacy license for 5 that still works, but like,
yeah, you can't get it now.
You can't buy, you can buy 6, you can buy 7, you can't buy 5. Like,
yeah,
they're like boneheadedly going against everything that people want from them. And like, they're, yeah, it's awful. It's super terrible. Now they've, I think recently they also started to do like tabs as a service kind of thing, or like trying to work with musicians and like get their tabs on their platform. And there's like a portal thing, and then you can, you know, like download songs from there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like terrible. Yeah, yeah, they have like a My Songbook score library. Oh yeah, they're selling a subscription service.
Oh, of course they are.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice. Following Bethesda's route.
Oh my god.
Did you hear about that fucking bullshit?
Oh, yeah. I've been hearing all about it.
Yeah.
God.
Okay.
I fucking hate Guitar Pro. Like, I love Guitar Pro, but I love the Guitar Pro that I had when I was in high school.
Yeah.
I fucking hate it now. But yeah. All right, is that good enough? Do we want to move on?
That's good enough, yeah.
All right. Cool people time.
Yeah.
I bought Outer Worlds. I didn't get to play it yet. Yesterday I was at a Diwali party.
Hmm.
You know what Diwali is?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, okay. For the listener, it's like a Indian cultural thing.
Yeah. So it's not like a holiday.
Yeah. It's like the Festival of Lights or whatever. I think that's how it translates. Like a religious, pseudo-religious, like, you know, yearly cultural thing.
Yeah, it's complicated.
So, yes. I don't want to get into it. It's very complicated. Because I will botch it. But yeah, so...
Because you've been doing a great job so far.
Yeah, right? Hey, that's on brand, right?
Totally on brand.
Never do
research.
I was there with friends, so like, I didn't get a chance to do much. I'm like super hungover.
So let me talk about The Outer Worlds. In case you're unaware, it's the new RPG from Obsidian, aka the guys who did the good Fallout game. The good Fallout games, right? They made 1, 2, and New Vegas.
No.
No? Oh, no, wait. 1 and 2 were... No.
Black Isle. So
Black Isle.
Let me get into the history. Black Isle, yes. Black Isle disassembled. Parts of it went into Obsidian. Basically, they created Obsidian.
Right. That's what I meant, right?
Yeah.
Guys who like were in charge of the good Fallout games and New Vegas, which is like the best modern iteration.
Yes.
The
only good modern iteration.
The only good modern iteration of Fallout, totally. I was a huge Fallout 3 fan, but I was like 21 years old, and then I replayed it like a few years ago and was like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
Anyway, and then I played New Vegas and I had a really good time.
Yep.
So in here it's like in space, it's sci-fi, and it draws a lot, I mean, the same kind of aesthetic as Borderlands in many ways. It's like ultra-capitalist, backwater.
Except not cringy.
Except not terrible.
Yeah.
Not made by terrible people. But it's not like over-the-top and flamboyant and dubsteppy. But it is like ultra-capitalist corporations who have taken over like a fringe backwater part of space.
Kind of Starship Troopers-y, right?
Yeah, but again, I'm sorry, but it's really Borderlands. Like, there's different corporations. They all have their own specialties. They're like run by crazy psychopaths. And you play this guy who's the only person that a mad scientist is like able to resurrect from a colony ship. And the company doesn't want to resurrect the colony ship because it costs too much money and it hurts the company's bottom line. So they're leaving like thousands of people frozen forever in space. So my impression so far, the gameplay is really fun. It's like, it's Obsidian and they've perfected like this formula incredibly.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in the details, like there's slow-mo, right? There's like not like VATS. it's actual slow-mo. Mm-hmm. So, like, the way the engine handles your momentum when you're in slow motion, like, the way it carries over and you get this, like, action film kind of vibe is amazing. It's beautiful. It's just drop-dead gorgeous. I'm playing it on Ultra, and it's just incredible. But it's not just the quality. Also, like, the time that's been put into the models and the backgrounds, just beautiful. And if you like the Obsidian formula, you like this as well. You'll recognize the perk system. You'll recognize the attribute system. They have added a few things, like using non-dialogue skills inside dialogues. So, mm-hmm. for example, if you have a high sneak, you can, like, say it, tell someone, you didn't see me coming because I'm silent like the night, and, like, intimidate them.
Yeah, that's Obsidian's, like, trademark. I think that's they've been doing that for, since the original Fallout games. I think that's, yeah.
But I think here they bought it in, like, more than New Vegas, at least. Mm-hmm. And it's, like, a very important part. They also did this cool thing where you get, like, an extra buff to all the skills at every 20 points. So, like, more penetration if you're using long arms. But, for example, lockpicking, the first one in 20 is, like, all one-pick doors don't cost a pick. Stuff like that. I finished, like, the tutorial area. So now I can, like, travel around a bit. The issue that I have, like, three issues. One that ties into, like, what I just said. It's extremely Obsidian. Like, the characters, the formula, the archetypes of the characters, the dialogue options. It's like, if you've played an Obsidian game, even the way that you click on a person and it zooms in on their face, it's like so New Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And the design as well is really similar, because in New Vegas, you also had these capitalist overtones, like, yep. the corporations gone wild. So it's very samey in that way, right? The jokes are funny, but it's like Obsidian funny. You've heard a lot of these jokes before.
Yeah, they have a very distinct style of writing.
Yeah, and they didn't try to, like, branch out from here. Which brings me to the second thing. Again, I've only played, like, the introductory part, but the story doesn't really make sense. Like, it doesn't bother to tie things together, and I'll give you an example. Spoilers, it's, like, in the first 15 minutes of the game, and it's so Obsidian. There's, like, the capitalist settlement where most people live and they work like dogs in, like, a canning factory. Mm-hmm. And there's the nearby settlement of people who, like, rebelled and ran away.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to decide who's going to get the power, right? You can steal, like, the power generator from each settlement and decide who gets to live and who gets to, like, basically close up shop, right? Already sounds like most intro Obsidian quests ever.
Yep.
You show up at the guy who, like, runs the original settlement, and he just starts talking to you and gives you a quest. There's, like, no, who are you? Why are you here? Why the fuck are you dressed like this? Like, in clothes from 70 years ago because you're on a colony ship. Why do you want to work for me? What's in it? Like, there's nothing. It's just like, oh, a new guy. Maybe our luck is about to change. Say, you could help me with. It's like, yep. What the fuck? Why is there no, like, stitching? Caveat? I think I'm judging everything really harshly now because I'm playing Disco Elysium. The writing is so in-depth and so encompassing. Maybe this wouldn't have bothered me if I, like, played it, like, 6 months ago, but it does kind of great. And the last thing, the selection of skills and the type of characters you can build, you've done it all before, right? Mm-hmm. You can be, like, the fast melee character. You can be the persuasion guy. You can be the sneak plus hacking plus sniper guy. It's like, okay, and the perks. It's like, oh, 25% extended slow motion. Oh, more carrying capacity. Like, again, that kind of samey kind of vibe.
I mean, that being I think said, yeah, the game being, like, really idiosyncratic is kind of the point. Is that, like, because people have been clamoring for, like, the Obsidian game.
Yeah, totally. And no one else does it as good as them.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, it's preventing me from saying that this game is a 9 and giving it an 8 instead, right?
Yeah.
It's fun, I enjoy it, but it's not going to leave a lasting mark on me. Whereas Disco Elysium is literally fucking up my life because mm-hmm. it's so depressing and weird and amazing and awful and beautiful. So if you're looking for, like, this game that will blow your mind, Outer Worlds won't do that. But if you're just looking to have fun and, like, shoot things and do fetch quests and get cool signature weapons, by the way, start from the beginning of the game, which is really nice. They're not like these ultra rare, like, late game stuff. You just find them around in cool places. If that sounds good to you, if you're missing New Vegas, then this is a good game for you to play.
Yep.
That's it.
Yeah, I didn't do much cool stuff this week. Just kind of a busy week. I did watch the pilot for the Watchmen show.
Oh, that's out, right? I've seen a few people talk about it. What do you think?
I'm of two minds. So it's cool, right? But so the production values are good, which is, you know, it's very well made for sure. And it provides like an interesting setting and sets up intrigue. Obviously, like it's just a pilot, so it's like almost they have all the promise, right? But who knows where it'll go. My concern is they have decided to set it in a setting where it's like they're basically everything is set around like racial themes, right? The main characters are cops and the bad guys are like pseudo KKK. But maybe there is more to it than that, right? And it's written by Damon Lindelof of Lost fame, right? Yeah. So it's like, I really don't know if they have the kind of finesse to do a good job with this.
Yeah, to pull this off.
Yeah. It's like,
I've heard people saying this is okay, but why is it in the Watchmen universe? It's like, it doesn't have to be. It could be its own thing.
Yeah, so I feel like that's going to come later, right? Like, they'll tie it in more. There's barely any Watchmen ties in the first episode. I mean, you get to see Ozymandias, who's played by Jeremy Irons, by the way.
Oh, good casting.
Yeah. He's like old now and alone, right? And they don't say his name, but it's him. You see like Dr. Manhattan on like a TV screen at some point, like he's on the news. And like there's potential here, but I fear that they'll go for like the oh cool awesome factor and like really make a mess of the kind of, you know, policing, race, all that business. Like,
yeah, it's not gonna be handled well.
Yeah. Like, but people are gonna give it so much leeway because it's cool superhero stuff, right? Like, and the discussion around it is gonna be like nauseating.
By the way, we missed like a music news thing,
which is
we're gonna do it here at the end. The Great Misdirect turns 10 today.
That's a good between album.
Between the Buried and Me's
last Great Misdirect. Great album.
It's not just a good album; it's an underrated album.
Yeah.
It's super good. I think it's on par with Colors, personally.
Yeah, for sure.
It has a lot more like weird, ambient, cool shit than Colors does.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great album. That's it.
Great Mr. X, great. Other cool people stuff that I've done. Like I don't want Watchmen to be my thing. it's cool, but yeah. So okay. Yeah. I'll talk about two things shortly. I play this new game called Valfaris. It's made by the people who made Slain. I don't know if you're familiar with that one.
Yeah, Slain, I know.
This is basically Slain in space. So it's like a 2D platformer, but like not very heavy on the platforming. It's kind of a run and shoot type of platformer, right?
What's it called?
Valfaris, Valfaris. Mm-hmm. I think you might like this. The aesthetic is so 40K.
Yeah, I can see that just from the like poster.
Yep. And like it's decent. It's kind of challenging, but not super challenging. It's not doing anything mind blowing, but it just feels so good. Like the music is great. It's obviously metal, and like it just.
Are you playing it on the PC or the PS4?
Switch, actually.
Oh, Switch.
Yeah. It plays really well. The aesthetic, actually, even though it looks 2D, it's actually all like 3D models, but they're rendered in a fashion that makes them look like 2D hand animated, which looks really cool.
Yeah.
This
looks awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet. And also, the dialogue is really funny too. It's like all one-liners of like grim darkness of space to your one-liners.
I mean, he has a fucking power sword, so they're not being very coy with the Warhammer influences.
Yep. It's pretty sweet. And beyond that, I'm replaying Deadly Premonition on the Switch. They recently ported it to the Switch, and since I have a lot of commute time, you know, Switch games are pretty good for me. And like Deadly Premonition, I love that game, but I played it like almost 10 years ago and I wanted to go back to it. And man, this game is like a fucking trip. Like, just a brief sell on the game. So the game is literally just Twin Peaks. Literally, just Twin Peaks. Like, the main character is an FBI agent who comes to a small town with full of, like, quirky people and lots of jazz. And he talks to himself. And, like, he's really particular about his coffee. So the game ostensibly is a survival horror game, but mostly it's just, like, weird small town simulator, right?
Yeah.
It's, like, controls are so bad. The game technically is terrible. Like, the driving controls are, like, so hilariously bad. And, like, the shooting is just, like, comically easy. And, like, the animations are hilariously bad. But, like, the writing, the characters, everything is just, like, a trip in, like, the best way. Like, the main character constantly references and quotes classic movies. Like, he just talks Amazing. About movies all the fucking time. And, like, he has these just, like, most inappropriate anecdotes at any given time. Like, everybody, he's a dick to everyone, but, like, not because he's an asshole. Like, he's just, like, very upbeat. But, like, he just, like, is so non sequitur all the time. And, like, the yeah. town is full of just super weird people. Like, there's this guy in a wheelchair. He was wearing, like, a gas mask at all times. And he has a servant who walks around with him. The guy doesn't talk. He talks to his servant. And his servant always speaks in rhymes. Like, it's just, like, super
yeah,
weird.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
And, like, it's, like, the terrible game, but it's an incredible game. And it's just the joy to play through. And it's, like, you know, the town is, like, realistically large, so, like, driving from anywhere to anywhere takes, like, a really long time, and you have limited gas in your vehicle, and the gas runs out so fucking fast, and, like, there's a That's hunger incredible. Meter, there's a sleep meter.
Yeah.
I mean, these sound kind of tedious, but they're, like, a non-issue, but, like, it's just the fact that there's all these systems, right? Like, if you don't change your dress for over a day, you flies start coming around you, so you have to, like, change your suit and get it sent to cleaning. So here was the progression of events that happened to me. I'll just tell this one story and then I'll finish. I did one of a main quest, right? And then I was supposed to, like, be at the town hall, like, the next day, at between, like, 3 and 5 p.m. and of course there's a realistic night day cycle with, like, people in the town have schedules, right? So I had, like, 12 plus hours to burn, right? So I started driving around, trying to look for side quests, but, like, it's nighttime, so most places are closed. And then I started running low on gas. But the gas station is closed. So you can smoke in the game, and smoking, like, makes the time pass, right? So they basically sat down in front of the gas station and smoked for 9 hours. and because, like, I didn't have enough gas to get back to the hotel. So a gas station opens up, but I'm super hungry, super tired, and, like, flies start gathering around me. I get gas. I go to the convenience store. By the way, in the convenience store, I do this side quest of pushing boxes around to get a discount card. And with a discount card, I buy a map that shows me where ghosts are. Anyway.
Okay.
I buy a can of Hollandaise sauce, which... For $15 plus some cents. Like, no, none of the prices are flat in the game, by the way, but of course. A can of Hollandaise sauce fills your hunger, so you eat the can of Hollandaise sauce. And then, you know, drive to the police station, sleep there, and then that's it. Like, I change my suit, get it sent to cleaning, and I'm good. Now,
amazing.
Did a bunch of side quests in the middle. Like, it's just like this, like...
That sounds great.
Incredible, really stupid game. It's great. I love it. And, like, it's just cool. Like, the funny thing is, the story, everything is just so Twin Peaks, down to the characters. But, like, the creator at the time denied having ever watched Twin Peaks. It's like, come
of course,
on, dude.
Just to complete the aesthetic.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Cool.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you for listening.